We're doing the Chazon Ish, Emunah u'Bitachon. We're up to the 14th section of the first chapter. Shnei kochot nivru b'nefesh ha'adam. Two forces within the soul of man. Koach ahava v'koach sinah. The power to love, the power to hate. V'lo'olam en yichus ha'adam l're'ehu b'kifaon shel shnei ha'kochot yachad. And man never has a relationship with his fellow man that is not impacted by one of these two, by the two of them. But one is active and one is silenced. The Chazon Ish says a line here that I really I fail to understand. He says the two are complete opposites, they cannot function in unison. I don't know. I think you can love and hate at different times the same person. And it can switch from minute to minute. But this is what the Chazon Ish says. The two are complete opposites. Ha'achra b'nehem mi'chiyo mi'amut. That distinction between who is loved and who is hated could be the distinction between who will live and who will die. Who will be given peace to rest and who will be forced to leave? Alarov talui b'maase be'ilot ha'meviot lidei ahava lefi chukei ha'teva shel ha'briyot. But most of the time, the person we love or hate, that love or hate stems from action. Our emotion, our feelings towards someone stems from action. And there are actions that bring us to love someone based on the nature of our relationship. And then you have causes for hate. But we also have concealed within our persona, deep within ourselves, there are also reasons that do not stem from action, but rather reasons that are hidden deep inside our soul that can produce chen v'ahava l're'ehu shu'utzag lefanav b'pam ha'rishona. Sometimes you see someone for the first time and you like them and you don't know them. And we're not talking about the attraction to the physical looks of a person. That's not what he's talking about. People will sometimes see someone of the opposite gender and get very attracted physically, and then they'll say, I like the person. And that's not what we're talking about. What we're talking about is a real affinity, a feeling that it clicks. I could tell you stories that I personally witnessed. I had a friend who was a bachelor for many years. He must have been in his 30s already. Must have been like 32 or 33. He dated maybe 1,000 girls. And then he went on a date. And he ended the date. And he said, see you next time, my wife. And she said, excuse me? And he said, you're going to be my wife at the end of the first date. And she said, I'm not going to date you again. And walked away. And he looked at her and said, yes, you will. And you're going to be my wife. And he walked away. And she spent 2 weeks talking to all her friends, saying the date went great, but the guy's a nut. And today they're married with 4 or 5 kids. Okay, so something clicked in him. I don't recommend doing this, guys. Don't do this at home, right? She did break up with him. But something clicked in him, and he said, that's right. And he came back to yeshiva, and we were like, our rooms were next to one another. And he said to me, I met my wife today. I said, really? How'd the date go? He said, the date went fine. I said, when are you going out again? He said, I don't know. Right now she broke up with me, but she's going to be my wife. Okay. It worked. But I'm not recommending anyone else do this. I wouldn't have thought it would have worked. But it clicked. You know, he came to the date, and it clicked. And there are times when suddenly something inside says, that's right. And again, people today misattribute this. People think that when there's a strong attraction, that's love. No. And this idea is in the Rambam as well. The Rambam says that built within the human personality, there is the capacity to have an affinity with someone the first minute you meet them. The Rambam describes it his way, but the Rambam says it happens. It doesn't happen often in life. It won't necessarily happen with your wife. You might go out with your wife 15 dates, 13 dates, and not be certain if she's the right one. I always say I was on my way to date number 12 or 13 to break up with my wife. Fortunately for me, I met a friend of mine who told me don't do it. But I was on my way to break up. It wasn't clear to me by day 12 or 13 that she was the right one. This is on tape, yeah. People know this. It's not a secret. I couldn't decide, and I figured if I don't know by now, it must be wrong. I thought it should have been clear by then. Okay. And I'll tell you a secret now that I never said before online. When I met her the first date, it clicked. I was sure she was my wife. But then as it kept going, it wasn't taking off. It was like, this is okay, but I guess I was wrong. Meaning when I walked out on the first date, when I saw her after we spoke 3 minutes, in my heart I said, she's the one. 3 minutes into the date. But I'm an intellectual guy. I don't go by things like that. So I gave it another date and another date, and then we hit date number 10 or 11. And I said to myself, I don't know. I guess I was wrong. So I'm pacing back and forth the final minutes before the date, and I'm telling myself, I can't do this to a girl, to keep dating her when I don't know. And I thought it was right, but if it was right, shouldn't I know by now? And it was either date 12 or 13, something like that, and I decided, that's it, I'm not doing this to her. It's not right. She's a nice girl. I'm going to keep dragging it on, and I don't know. And I meet a friend of mine, and he says to me, where are you going? I said, on a date. And he says, how's it going? And I said, I don't know, I think I'm breaking up. And he says, why? I said, how long can you continue with a girl? 12 dates and I'm still not sure if she's the right one, so how can I continue? He says to me, go 25 dates. After 25 dates, you could still decide she's not the right one. Keep going, that's not a reason to break up. And I listened to him, and I'm married to her today. Okay, so I'm just saying, you know, even though it clicked in the beginning, I wasn't going to go by that. I didn't... But the Chazon Ish says this does exist. He's not talking about marriage. He's saying sometimes you meet someone, and off the bat, you just feel like, wow, something's right. I'd like to be that person's friend. Ashaloi kiro me'olam. You meet someone you've never met before. And there's this sudden feeling, I want to connect to this person, even though you don't know the person yet. Umin kudat ahava zo, holechet ha'ava v'gdela u'mitvasefet. So when you have that starting point, so then the relationship just grows from there. did you want to say something?
I said not
here. Ah, that's a good thing to say. I assume you guys all experienced this one. Sometimes you meet someone, they've barely uttered a syllable, and you already can't stand the person.
From 20 feet away,
you can't stand them, right? Rak biglad shelo matzach ein beinav. Something, you know, he didn't find favor in your eyes, and you can't stand the guy. V'asina olecht u'mitpatachat beinahem. And that enmity just grows, it festers between them. U'v'yichud ha'davar rakil be'ele shekishron sichlam chazak, umidotehim erot v'chadot. This is most common with people who are sharp intellectually, and when it comes to their traits, they're very sharp and accurate. Because then what happens is they analyze the person, and they analyze what they say, and they analyze their motions, and they can catch a person from 20 feet away. I used to volunteer in an organization called JEP, Jewish Educational Program. And I was friendly with the head of the program. He would always set up chavrusas. He had kids. We have an alumni here who 15, 20 years ago, he was studying there as a kid there. And we, in high school, we used to volunteer. Like, the whole high school used to volunteer and learn with kids who had no background in Judaism. They'd come in one night a week. We'd learn with them for 25 minutes, a half hour, and then we'd play games with them. It was an hour program. So I asked the guy who headed the program, I said to him, you know, I came in ninth grade, and you matched me up with someone. He came in through the door. You had 1 minute to size me up and 1 minute to size him up, and you're matching, you're making matches all day long. How do you do that? You don't know the people. You're matching up people you don't know, neither side, and he was very, very good at it. So he said to me, when a guy walks through the door, I know a lot about him. I said, what do you mean you know a lot about him? So he said, as he's walking to my desk, I'm looking at, is his shirt tucked in and is his shirt tucked out? How's his hair combed? How long is his hair? Where is he wearing his yarmulke? Yeah, you know? I'm looking at many, many aspects of the person as he's walking to my desk. By the time he starts talking, then I listen to every word he says, and I listen very closely. And by the time we finished our first 1-2 minute conversation, I know enough about him to be able to hopefully make a good match. So the average person doesn't look that way. These are things that can be learned. But the Chazon Ish is saying, when a person has both his intellectual and his character traits very honed, so because a person is very careful how they speak, so they're also very careful how others speak. Meaning, the more you develop it, the more you pay attention to it. Teachers are very often very careful. If a person's a good teacher, he's constantly listening to himself, listening to the verbiage they use, listening to the grammatical structure. And then when they speak to other people, they also pay attention to things that other people might not pay attention to. I'll tell you a funny story. A guy was dating a girl, and she calls me up and says, this guy is not proper. He gave me a hug on the first date. So I listened, and I said, and what bothers you? I just want to make sure I understand correctly. She said, what do you mean? He gave me a hug on the first date. I said, and on the third date, would that have been okay? I wanted to check. Is she Shomer Nagia? Or it's because it was the first date. You know, she did say on the first date. She said, I don't know if third or fifth, but not first. So, okay, now I understood who I'm talking to. You know, I don't know who the other party is. But if you listen, if you're used to listening, so you hear different things. I was interviewing someone. Same story. I said, you know, I didn't know the person. I said, I'm happy to try and set someone up if they keep Torah mitzvot, if they don't keep Torah mitzvot. It's not right to set up someone who is Shomer Negev with someone who isn't, because they're coming in with different expectations to the date. You gotta be straight. So I said, I hope you're not hurt by the question, but do you want to be set up with someone who's Shomer Negev? So the girl tells me, on principle, yes. What did you hear from that, right? If you heard that on principle, yes, okay, you guys understood what was said. I'm just saying there are things which I wouldn't have noticed, but as you start talking to people more, you notice more. So the Chazon Ish says the more a person hones his mind and his traits, the more prone he is to develop a first impression that's very sharp, to the point where he can hate someone who he hardly knows. And that's very dangerous. That's not a strength.
What can you do against it?
Let's see. Yeah, Clive has been waiting. Yeah.
I feel like the line between what we're talking about, what the Chazon Ish is talking about, and Dana Chatzchut is a very fine line.
Oh, he's not saying it's right. He's saying this is a tendency. He's not coming to say you should develop this. He's just saying you're going to find that this is the way it works. Sometimes it is that way. And you know what? You sometimes see it the other way. Sometimes you meet people and you see they can't stand you. And you didn't do anything to them. Like, you just opened your mouth. You didn't say a word. You know, why does the person hate you? I don't know if you've had that. I've had that. And you'd like to say he's an anti-Semite, but he's a Jew, right?
Yeah. So,
I'm just saying this. I'm saying there's you do encounter this. So the Chazon Ish is saying there is this capacity within us to develop a like or a dislike, and he uses harsher terms, to love or to hate someone who you don't really know. It's love at first sight, but it's also hate at first sight. Yes?
Just reminds me of the first part, of just like more love at first sight or whatever. Reminds me of, I don't know how much I believe in this kind of stuff, but the whole like past life books, if you ever read like Moody, whatever the guy's name is, he writes like a lot of people that they met like their friend or their wife, like immediately connect whenever he does, like hypnotizes them, but we see them as like, in the past life they're like the daughter, or they're a friend in the past life. I don't know, whatever, if it's true or not, but it's always an interesting idea.
Okay. Tov. On a Thursday night, we could talk about it at length. It's an interesting thought. I never heard that before.
It happened with David Melech, and we spoke about it last time, and they were Gilgul with Odom and Chava, and the guy was a snake.
I didn't. You didn't hear this here. No.
I didn't hear it.
Not here.
You know what I'm talking about? You ever heard that?
I will not acknowledge that I know what you're talking about. Back to the Chazon Ish. These aren't things that I believe we understand. So even if we encounter them, it's like, I think we should try to work very hard to conquer that part of Torah which we can understand. And after we've mastered that, then we can go back to the other stuff and it'll fall into place. I don't know if you remember, but last class you also brought up a concept which was very high Kabbalistic. And it again, it's not things which are an error, it's just things that I can't talk about because I don't understand them. Okay. I agree with you, meaning there are sources, right? If you see that book that we use for Jewish history, the Seder Adorot, that blue book, so I skip his parenthetical comments, but I personally read them. I'm saying in class, I skip them. So he mentions what you said and other stuff like that, right? So he keeps quoting that. In his history, he keeps saying, okay, and this one in the previous life was this, and this one in previous life was that. So I don't know what any of that means. But so that's why I skip it in class too. How amazing it is to see someone risk their life or give up their life for their people or for one person of their people. And that same person has no problems, no qualms to kill those which he hates. And now he uses a very difficult word. He says, in the known circumstance, and I am prohibited legally from expanding as to what I think he's talking about. You guys don't know what I'm talking about. There's a book that is illegal to print here in Israel, maybe even to own. It's called Perfidy. And the book discusses the different people who developed the State of Israel, who on the one hand were risking their lives on behalf of Jews, and on the other hand were very willing to have other Jews die. And that's why the book was banned, right? The book wasn't too complimentary about the founders of the state. I don't know.
I've seen it in Meir Sharon bookshop. That doesn't necessarily...
I don't know. At any rate, I'm assuming that's what he's talking about when he says in the known case. Because on the one hand, they really were risking their lives for other Jews. So he says, you have people, it's amazing to see. Here you have someone who's willing to risk his life for the nation or for individuals. And at the same time, he has no problem giving a deadly blow to the one he hates. But, says the Chazon Ish, these are all part of human nature. And this is part of the nature God planted within a human being. Man, the great man that he spent much of the first chapter discussing, was also given the strength, the different strengths of the different creatures under the sun, v'alehem ofkad nifkad chacham, huasechel. And even though he was given the capacity to do all of that, you know, Darwinian theory says that when we're upset at someone, when we're about to yell, when we get really angry, we have a tendency to pick up our lips a drop. I give a half smile, what you might call a snarl. Now, Darwinians will say it stems from your capacity, like the lion before he pounces and sticks his teeth into his prey. By the same token, the human being, before he's about to yell at someone or express his anger, so again, he's baring his teeth. It's part of Darwinian theory. So at any rate, we don't go with Darwin all the way, but we do say that the different strengths, the different forces that act within the nature of the lion and the tiger and the bear and all the different animals, they were all implanted within us. But we were given the great general, so to speak, to rule over all these forces, and that is the mind. Now the mind, the intellect, is really divided between two places. The intellect is divided between the brain and the heavens, meaning our thought, our soul, our mind, or our capacity to think, really stems from two places. It's connected to the physical body. Yes, you have a brain, but it's also connected up above. And so we were given this responsibility to take charge of our traits, to deal with them, and take control of our tendencies, and not allow ourselves to be animals, not allow ourselves to go after our nature. Yes, says the Chazon Ish, we have it built in to have this tendency. I'll tell you a secret. You're not going to be happy to hear it. It's an unfortunate part of life. But it's true. You will look at your own children, God willing, and you will see some of them you have a natural tendency to like, and some you have a natural tendency, we'll say, to like less, okay? But that's what happens. They're not all created the same. And some jive with your personality, and some don't. And you have to deal. I remember when we were kids, there was a kid with us in shul who was annoying like anything. I once had the unfortunate luck of sitting next to him for davening. And the guy had all kinds of things he would do that were very annoying. I can just describe to you for a second what it was like sitting next to him in shul. And you're sitting next to the guy trying to daven, and every second he's clearing his throat and coughing and scratching, and you're wondering, does he have lice? No, he comes from a clean family, upper class. There's nothing, you know. And I'm sitting there trying to daven, and he's like, you know, he's stretching into my face, he's scratching all over and coughing like right next to me. He doesn't stop clearing his throat, and I'm asking myself, will this pass? Yeah. Like, is it, he's just got to finish scratching, finish coughing, you know. An hour later into davening, I'm sitting there sweating. I think I'm not going to embarrass him, I'm not going to walk away from sitting next to him. Years later, I was there when there was a certain conversation between one of the children's educators and one of the kid's parents. And I hear the parent telling the educator, the parent says, I can't sit next to him. I sit there in shul and I'm going out of my mind, but I can't say anything to the kid. It's not his fault. So this is the nature he was given. He can't sit still for a second. It's not his fault. And it shocked me. You know, the father would always sit next to him calmly, smiling, as though nothing were happening. You know, you could imagine you're sitting in shul, the kid picks up his foot, takes off the shoe, starts exploring inside, everyone's davening. It's not a lot of fun sitting there in shul next to him. And the father is like calmly telling him, you know, you shouldn't do that in shul. Maybe put the shoe back on if you really want to look. Why don't you go outside and do it? And I was convinced that the father didn't see anything wrong with what was going on and wasn't even bothered by it. And I said to myself, okay, you know what? Maybe that's why the kid turned out this way. Never said, you know, I didn't say anything and no one said anything. But years later, I'm standing there and the father says, he says to the educator, the poor kid, it's so tough for him. People can't sit next to him on a bus. People have a hard time being comfortable around this kid. And even I, as his parent, can only handle so much before I have to leave the scene to catch my breath before I can handle some more. And then he says, and his mother too. She has a very hard time. So I'm describing part of the external difficulties. There were other difficulties. The guy couldn't carry a tune, but he wasn't connected to the idea that he couldn't carry a tune. So you're sitting next to him trying to sing with the chazan, and he's all over the place. You know, okay. I'm saying there were all kinds of issues. And when he'd want to walk out, you know, we used to sit on benches. So when he'd walk out, he'd say, excuse me, and stick his elbow in your stomach. Unintentionally, he didn't mean it. You know, he was discoordinated in many ways. Now, it's not his fault, but that doesn't mean it's easy. So, as parents, you will see some kids you jive with and some kids you don't. And it's not their fault. When you have a kid that doesn't stop asking you questions, they're going to ask you 1,000 questions. You're going to sit down and the kid will start asking, Abba, why do we have salt on the table? And why are we eating from plates and not from bowls? And why do we have to have all the salad mixed together? Why don't we have each vegetable separate? And wouldn't it be more easier if we just eat the vegetables whole? Why do we have to cut them into pieces? You know, and the salad dressing, you could put more at one time. You didn't have to put and mix. But Abba, I don't understand. Do you really need a fork and a spoon? Isn't it enough just a fork? There's no soup at the table. A fork would be enough. And why does the napkin have to be under the fork? Why can't it be over the fork? I don't understand. What are you guys laughing at? Wait a second. And if we're all eating on plates anyways, do you really need a tablecloth? Ah, you don't trust us not to spill. So you're assuming we don't spill from the onset. But I wanted to ask you about how the water works. How does it work when I turn on the faucet, the water comes out? And why is it mutter to do that on Shabbos? But Abba, 1 second, I didn't start asking you questions. Why didn't you answer me yet? You know, you sit down, you guys are laughing. I'm quoting to you this past Shabbos at my table. You guys are laughing. I'm telling you, there are kids that are like that. So you look and... And Abba, I have a lot of questions on the parasha too. What are you supposed to say? You know, so you sit down with the kid and you try answering them. You say, okay, we had a 5-minute session. We'll have another 5-minute session, one step at a time. But some parents like that and some parents don't, and it's normal. Says the Chazon Ish, you were granted a mind. And the mind is not only physical, it's also spiritual. And that means you have the capacity to take control of your traits. I'm telling you as a teacher, you have students sometimes that walk in that drive you crazy. If you guys will listen to the classes from 4, 5, 6 years ago, you sometimes hear. You hear what's going on in class. I've had emails where people say, you should not learn more from how you answered that guy than from the whole class. Because we had years where we had really annoying people. But as a teacher, are you allowed to tell a person, you know, you're annoying, do me a favor, go to someone else's class. You can't do that, right? So you got to deal, and you got to be friendly, you got to be warm. As a parent, you got to do the same thing. And you know what? As a human being and as a Jew, you got to do the same thing. That means you could have a classmate, you could have a roommate. I told you guys the story about that teacher for English literature. Yeah, I told you the story. In a nutshell, we had a very vulgar teacher. And I went to the Rosh Yeshiva and I said, you know, this is a yeshiva, I don't want to attend the class, I'll take all the tests, I don't want to be in the class. And he said, you'll be in that class because in life you will have to deal with annoying people. And I learned a lot from that. The fact that he forced me, the first few weeks I had very little respect in my mind for the Rosh Yeshiva. As a teenager, I couldn't swallow it. And then I saw, he's right. you got a deal. In life, you don't always have choices. And it could be your landlord, and it could be your boss, and it could be your co-worker. Doesn't matter. Says the Chazon Ish, the key here is to recognize it's natural, it's built in. Sometimes it's just that way. You'll see, your kids will bring over friends. And some of the friends are going to drive you crazy. And you're going to have to ask yourself, is there something wrong with the kid? Should I tell my son not to be friends with him? Maybe there's nothing wrong. Maybe it's just chemistry. Sometimes people get under our skin and they did nothing wrong. And they don't mean to do anything wrong. And I'm not saying you choose that guy to be your partner to start a business. I'm not saying you choose that person to marry them. But I am saying that in life, we have to know that we can overcome it. It's real, it's live, it exists. And says the Chazon Ish, you were granted a mind. Use it. And the fact that you have a predisposition to hate someone, to the point where the Chazon Ish says, you wouldn't mind if the guy dropped dead. Oh, we like to talk nicer. We like to say sweet. Avat chinam. Yes, we aspire to that. But bottom line, we can develop such an anathema that we can find the person so revolting that we don't really care what happens to him.
It's
wrong. You're supposed to love every Jew. You are supposed to undo that. And the Chazon Ish is telling you, you can undo that. Yeah. If a person behaves as though they like someone with time, they will like someone.
Fake it to make it.
Fake it to make it, right. Right. It's a good line, yeah. And so that this Chazon Ish is priceless. Because we sometimes fall prey to this, you know. And we let ourselves get away with it because the emotions are real.
It's not even the premeditated. Somebody do that with intention and not...
If they do it with intention, but sometimes they don't.
Yes, sometimes.
Right. We're talking about a situation where it's not premeditated. Yeah. And in life, you're going to have to deal with it.
And you say that it's a mind that it's from the body and mind from the heaven. I disagree with that. The mind, the brain is just brain. It's like
right? I didn't say the brain.
Ah, okay.
The thought, the intellect, is half-half. You see, the thought can attain spiritual concepts and can attain prophecy.
Yeah.
We say that prophecy is not seen with the physical brain. Mm-hmm. It's seen with the soul. So, call it the soul. Call it life. Call it
mind,
intellect.
Not the brain.
Right, right. Right. Yes?
What do you do if you meet someone... Well, it happened to me a few times in life that I met someone and they give me a very bad feeling. And then you try to put that feeling away and try to think it in a rational way and put this first impression away. And in the end, they end up like being very bad towards you.
Right.
Then after a few times, you think maybe I should stick to my first impression.
Love them from a distance.
Yeah.
I'm not saying you have to get close to someone. And very often, if you have bad vibes, there's a reason. And at the same time, we have to be careful not to let that...
How are you supposed to approach the situation? You're not going to be like, you know, business partners or really close friends, but...
You could be positive to the person.
You're not going to be outwardly mean to him either, but you know, as you said, like, you wouldn't mind if he dropped dead. And it's not even that extreme, but, I mean, you wouldn't mind if something bad happened to him. You're not going to say it to his face.
Right, but we have to undo that. It's wrong. It's not legitimate.
I'm saying what we're undoing is that the thought that it would not bother us if something bad happens to him.
The root of that thought.
That's an internal thing that you don't think
right,
whatever.
Right, but the root of that.
What is the root of that?
Hatred.
The root of that is the hatred, the enmity that stems simply from the fact that we don't jive.
It's a very inward thing that's very, like...
That's very real, right. Mm-hmm. But it's real.
Yeah.
It's there.
Yeah.
And you, if you overcome it, you start training yourself to control your emotions. There's a fantastic story that a person came to Rav Tzvi Yehuda Kohen Cook and told him how his relative passed away, and Rav Cook sat with him and wept. And then the guy left, and a minute later, a chassan walked into the room to get the rabbi's blessing on his way to the wedding. And the rabbi was radiant, and he was happy with him, and he was dancing with the chassan on his way out to the chuppah. And I heard the story from Rav Bigun on a speech. He said, that's when the students realized that he had control over his emotions. That when he wept because he felt for this one. And he was happy because he felt for that one. The average person lets the emotions take control of him. And a giant says, I'm not going to let my emotions take control. I can control them and focus them and know when to be happy and when to be sad. That's extreme. I don't think we could do that and be real. If we did that, we wouldn't really care when we cried. It would all be outward, you know.
So I still don't understand what are we supposed to change about? Because let's say this guy annoys you. Let's say he doesn't mean to annoy you, but he annoys you.
Right.
He really is an annoying guy.
Right.
And you're not going to tell him he's annoying, and you're not going to you know leave your seat from davening. But you know, in your head, you're going to think, well, this guy's really annoying.
You can think he's really annoying, and the more you think it, the less you like him. Or you can work on not seeing that part of him, seeing other parts of him. You can. It's all a question of vantage point. I can tell you many stories that way. I never cease to learn this lesson myself, and I always tell myself I'm going to do better next time, and I'm still telling myself I'm going to do better next time. I was sitting in the library learning. Okay, so I learned the Mekka Zarav, and I was a bachelor. I didn't have anything to worry about. You know, my needs were taken care of by the yeshiva, breakfast, lunch, and supper. My big problem in life was in Bein Hazmanim when there wasn't too much food in yeshiva. Big deal, right? Okay, so I'm learning. I get up in the morning, I go learn, I finish learning, I go to bed. I could go a month on end where I didn't see the front door of the yeshiva. Like, straight back and forth. And, a guy comes in one semester and sits next to me in the library. And I see that this guy walks in at a leisurely pace. And some days he walks in at 9, and some days he walks in at 10, and some days he walks in at 11, and some days he doesn't show up. And his chavrusa is pretty patient with him, and I try to ignore what's going on next to me. And I want to focus on my learning. Okay. Whenever he talked to me, I try to keep it real short because I look at the guy and I see the guy doesn't stick to his schedule, and the guy, doesn't seem to be too serious about his learning. I'm sort of wondering what he's doing in yeshiva altogether, but it's none of my business. But I'm not going to waste my time schmoozing and chatting with him. And then he disappears for 2 weeks. When he comes back after 2 weeks, I feel it's only polite. I should stop my learning and turn to the guy and ask him, hey, what was going on the last 2 weeks? Is everything okay? So out of my benevolence and graciousness, I turn to the guy. I stop my learning and I look at him and I say, hey, welcome back. Is everything okay? So he looks at me and says, you serious? I said, yeah, why? What's wrong? He says to me, you don't know why I'm here? I said, no, I don't know why you're here. I thought you were here to learn. You know, I'm still half joking. And he says to me, no, it's not exactly that way. And he turns back to his Gemara. And he doesn't tell me, he doesn't like want to shock me or anything. So after he leaves, I ask his chavrusa, what's going on? He says to me, he has 6 kids. The eldest is 12 or 13. The youngest is 1. And his wife is dying. They came here for treatment of cancer and to be close to the hospital for the radiation and everything else. She has incurable cancer. And suddenly I look at the guy, I'm like, how does he ever make it to yeshiva? 6 kids, and the youngest one is a year and a half, and his wife has, huh? Okay, suddenly the picture changes on you, right? Suddenly it's a totally different picture. From that day onward, any opportunity I had to talk to this tzaddik, I grabbed it, and suddenly I realized the guy was a wellspring of knowledge. And when he'd walk in, it was because he hardly got sleep at all at night. He was taking care of the kids, taking care of his wife, and in spite of that, he'd force himself to learn whatever hours he could get in. So people sometimes ask me today, nowadays, who they should get a bracha from. I always send them to him. you know, his wife passed away, and whatever. He had many, many hardships in his life, and in spite of that, the guy came to yeshiva. When he had a free minute, he came to learn. Suddenly, it's a different picture, right? But you look at the guy sitting next to you, and you say, come on. Your chavrus is here waiting. Some days you show up at 9, some days at 10, some days at 11. You try not to be judgmental. You think you're being very nice because you keep telling yourself I shouldn't be judging him, right? Okay, so I'm saying it's all perspective. We allow ourselves to judge other people and to think of other people and to hate other people. And the Chazon Ish says if we want to take control of our mind, and we want to be humans and take advantage of the gifts we were given, then our mind will take control of our emotion, and we can control how we feel towards other people. And I can give you a very sharp example for that, which maybe won't be so politically correct in this institution, but it's worth saying anyways. There are human beings that live on this planet, and some of them live in the eastern part of Jerusalem, and some of them live in Gaza. And it's true that many of them are trying to kill us, and we have a responsibility to defend ourselves and even fight wars and even take proactive action to protect ourselves. But at the end of the day, there are still those among them who are innocent civilians. What percentage? I don't venture to know. I don't know how many of them really want me dead and don't. I don't know. But there are. And the Mishnah says, Chaviv Adam Shenivra B'Tzelem. God loves all of humanity. They were created in His form. So if you'd ask me, as a soldier, do I shoot to kill? Yeah, that's your job. You know, if someone's trying to kill us, we got to kill them first, right? If you'd ask me, do we have to be proactive? Of course we have to be proactive. We have to defend ourselves. And the fact that, unfortunately, innocent civilians are also killed in the process, what choice do we have? We didn't start this fight and we're not interested in it. But if you'd ask me, should I feel bad for the innocent civilians? Should I look at people there and say, you know, they're human beings and I should really have a feeling for them as part of humanity? The answer is yes. Again, our government takes it, you know, in a Christian completely lopsided way where, you know, the Ramatkal could say, I'd rather see a soldier dead than an Arab dead. That's not right. You know, that's taking it to the extreme. But on the other hand, we should be able to overcome our emotions. I'll tell you a scary story. I get a phone call one day. A girl wants a shidduch. The only thing is, she comes from Gaza. And she converted to Judaism. A real ger. And I had such a hard time hearing this heavy Arab accent and being positive on the phone. And I said to myself, what kind of creature am I? What's wrong with me? What's going on here? She did nothing wrong. Something wrong with me, nothing wrong with her. Ah, but it involves what the Chazon Ish said. Taking control of our natural reaction, taking control of our instincts and our emotions. It's doable and it must be done. That's a part of realizing our human potential, our godly human potential. Meaning our potential as human beings to be godly, to take control of ourselves. So yeah. Yeah. Yeah.